Could you pray for me for a moment as I pray for you, that we can listen to God's word together? And let us entrust each other and our prayers to Our Lady's intercession. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. I thought we could have a little Greek lesson today. I realized, you know, since you're not required to take Greek in seminary, you miss out on that great joy. So it's always nice to have a little bit of Greek. It turns out that in the first reading, what's translated in our lectionary as aspire to live a tranquil life. Tranquil life is the Greek word hesychasm. Maybe you've heard of hesychastic prayer or the hesychastic movement. The Greek word hesychasm is a kind of interior silence or interior tranquility or a tranquility of life, an inner peace, and is very much what we're striving to reflect on in the Day of Renewal. That kind of silence which is not merely the absence of noise, but that kind of silence which is also an interior peace, where things are full but at rest, in the right place. The traditional description of peace is the tranquility of order, having things in the right place. In our gospel, so we could describe that tranquility of life as a kind of interior silence. Things are in the right place. In the gospel, we get a little indication, if you're looking for silence, as I was, then we get a little indication from that short phrase, then he went away. And the departure of the master is a kind of exterior silence in which now these disciples who have received the various talents have the opportunity to act, to work, to do whatever they're going to do with those talents. Then he went away. There's a kind of exterior silence that's there. So our scriptures, as God amazingly, providentially always seems to do, lead us also into the theme for the Day of Renewal. But I want to start reading from a couple of passages from Cardinal Serra and his The Power of Silence. He really does such a beautiful job in that book of describing silence from so many different perspectives. It's not an extremely ordered book in the sense that it doesn't follow a kind of logical progression, but it provides so many rich images and descriptions of silence that it has a way of even moving us to silence. I had the same kind of experience in watching the documentary Integrate Silence. It was like I couldn't watch without being drawn into prayer in the very process of watching. I find Cardinal Serra's book to be that way. It draws us into prayer in the very process of reading, hearing some of these images. So in hopes of making that silence already present to you, I want to read just a couple of quotes from Cardinal Serra. He says, "There is no place on earth where God is more present than in the human heart. This heart truly is God's abode, the temple of silence. Even before the desert, the solitude, and the silence, God is already in man. The true desert is within us, in our soul." He says further, "Silence is not an absence. On the contrary, it is the manifestation of a presence, the most intense of all presences. So he directs us, first of all, within. My experience in reading that the heart is the abode of God, that there is no place in the world where God is more present than in the human heart, the temple of silence, gives me this kind of spontaneous wonder that I have this thing already in myself, I have this place already in myself, and then it kind of moves me to silence to experience that place that maybe I had forgotten about because of all of my activity and thoughts and the noise, all the things that I'm doing. To first of all be in awe at who we are and how we're made to be the temple of God's presence, the temple of silence. And then he directs us also to the exterior world. He says, the greatest mysteries of the world are born and unfold in silence. How does nature develop? In the greatest silence. A tree grows in silence, and springs of water flow at first in the silence of the ground. The sun that rises over the earth in its splendor and grandeur warms us in silence. What is extraordinary is always silent. In his mother's womb, an infant grows in silence. When a newborn is sleeping in his crib, his parents love to gaze at him in silence so as not to awaken him. This spectacle can be contemplated only in silence, in wonder at the mystery of man in his original purity. The wonders of creation are silent, and we can admire them only in silence. Art, too, is the fruit of silence. How else but in silence can we contemplate a painting or a sculpture, the beauty of a color and the correctness of a form? Great music is listened to in silence. Wonder, admiration, and silence function in tandem. So again, he gives us these very contemplative thoughts, helping us to reflect on silence, not as an absence, but as a fullness, as a presence. It's a kind of fertilizer. It's the right fertile soil in which the wonders of nature grow, in which the wonders of beauty develop. A silence that we cultivate interiorly and a silence that God cultivates exteriorly. Hesychasm, developing that interior silence, is something that's very rich in Eastern spirituality. That's why we have some of these Greek words from our Eastern brothers and sisters. And that was a preoccupation of the early desert fathers, of the early monastic spirituality, the early monks. One of them, St. Gregory of Sinai, describes the contrast. I want to offer several contrasts for you of silence and its opposite. In some cases, silence and also its counterfeit. There's a kind of good silence and a bad silence, or a positive silence and a negative silence. But St. Gregory of Sinai gives us the description of not having interior silence. What's the ultimate end of this? Because mostly where we live is somewhere in between. We kind of have enough silence so that we don't end up looking like what he describes, but maybe not so much silence that we really are where the Lord wants us to be. But if we take things to their ultimate extreme, we start to see where they're leading us. So he says, lakes of fire, quoting Revelation 19:20, signify self-indulgent souls. In these lakes, the stench of the passions, like fetid bogs, nourish the sleepless worm of dissipation, the unbridled lusts of the flesh, as it also nourishes the snakes, frogs, and leeches of evil desire, the loathsome and poisonous thoughts and demons. A soul in such a state already in this life receives a foretaste of the chastisement to come. Let's not go in that direction. The opposite, which he describes in another place, is another Greek word, apatheia. If we took that unthinkingly into English, we would end up with apathy, but it's not the same sense. And I'll come back to that in a moment, but apatheia. He says, the promised land is dispassion, apatheia, from which spiritual joy flows like milk and honey. So that tranquility of life, that apatheia, I'll come back to that in a moment. And again, a word from Cardinal Sarah, he says, the desire to see God is what urges us to love solitude and silence, for silence is where God dwells. He drapes himself in silence. So that those fetid bogs of sleepless dissipation and the stench of the passions, unbridled lusts of the flesh, the loathsome and poisonous thoughts and demons. So that's all of the interior noise that turns into something that's very sour and rancid. Apatheia is this peaceful place of rest and tranquility where things are stilled. Interiorly, we are stilled and can rest in silence. I already noted a contrast between exterior and interior silence. Just a couple of little quotes about that. Exterior silence, Thomas Merton describes as, he says, it's special necessity in our world in which there is so much noise and inane speech. Exterior silence is a protest and reparation against the sin of noise. So just having exterior silence is a starting place. Exterior silence is not an ending place, but it's a starting place. It's an environment in which we can develop that interior silence. And is a, first of all, a protest, there's a certain counterculture. When someone walks into a monastery and they experience the external silence, there's something different here. And we have to be careful continually to cultivate that. It's so beautiful in your life that you're very intentional about that with the days of renewal and also periods of grand silence and those monthly hermitage days and hermitage mornings, that there's a intentional cultivation of exterior silence. And the drift is always away from that. The drift is always toward more chatting and more noise and more activity and more all of these other things. So we have to be intentional about having those spaces of exterior silence to renew and encounter, to develop again the interior silence. Cardinal Sarah says, interior silence is the end of judgments, passions. Once we have acquired interior silence, we can transport it with us into the world and pray everywhere. That's a very beautiful insight. Interior silence is portable, but we have to have the, sort of the right environment. It has a way of dissipating over time, so we have to have places, times that we come back to renew the interior silence. And exterior silence is so helpful for that, to renew the interior silence that we then transport, we can take with us, carry with us into the world. Now I want to teach you a few more Greek words and also provide an image of what that interior silence looks like and how we develop it, how we develop that apatheia, as the Greek fathers describe it. They tell us that there is a kind of peak of our soul. We can think of it as the uppermost part of our soul or maybe the innermost part of our soul, but that they call the nous, N-O-U-S, the nous. So you sometimes will use the word metanoia, which is a transformation of that interior part of ourselves. Nous is connected with our mind, but it goes kind of deeper than that. We might say our intellect, although those words also have some different connotations, but this kind of peak of the soul or the innermost place in the soul where the soul touches the divine. We have that within us, that temple of silence, that temple of God's abode. There's a place in us that we can say touches the divine, the nous, the innermost place. The pneuma, like spirit, you know how to spell pneuma, like pneumonia. Different connotation. But anyway, our pneuma, our spirit, is kind of our intentionality, our consciousness, where we are interiorly at a particular moment. And that it moves through our interior, we might say, this kind of floating cloud, maybe you can describe it as, this place in our interior. And then maybe we say the bottommost or the outermost part of our soul is the psyche, where our soul touches the world. So through senses, through emotions, those are our responses, the outermost part of our soul in its contact with the world. And the pneuma is somewhere in our interior, between the innermost part or the peak and the outermost part or the bottom, between the nous and the psyche, our pneuma is kind of in there somewhere. Then the Greek fathers tell us about the pathē, the passions, P-A-T-H-E, pathē, passions, which they describe as being like hooks that come up through the psyche, through that outermost part of our soul. And the danger is that they can hook the pneuma and sort of drag it toward the outermost part of our soul, so that we live in this kind of superficiality, that we live in this surface place, in this exterior place, rather than in an interior place. We get hooked by those passions. So we can think of when we get stirred up with anger or jealousy or fear or those strong passions that have a way of drawing us outward, and we lose that interior peace and silence and tranquility. We lose our contact with God when we get so drawn into those passions. So like hooks, it draws our spirit out of our souls. And then another thing that's sort of floating around in our interior are these thoughts. Sometimes we call them distractions. We have these different thoughts that pass through. In Greek, the logismoi, the logos, words, is a related word, logismoi, these thoughts that are floating around also in our interior, passing through us. So the goal of our sort of active purification is to unhook those pathē and to allow, to unhook those pathē so that our pneuma can be in touch with the nous, so that our interior intentionality, our consciousness can be available, can be free to be in touch with that place where God dwells within us. And so we have to actively develop that disarming, that unhooking of the passions. When we've unhooked the passions, we are without passions. Apatheia. Pathē, passions. Apatheia is to be unhooked and to have that interior freedom to be able to move, have our intentionality move and be in touch with God. We may also be in touch with the world, but our pneuma, our spirit, is able to be in the innermost place at the same time as we are perhaps in touch with the exterior place in the world. And being able to do that, when the pneuma is in the nous, it's what we call contemplation, theoria in the Greek. So that apatheia, developing that interior silence, and it's an active work. The enemy is constantly trying to hook us with those passions, and also the sort of, if we don't have a clear enough interior, as things are get more clouded in there, those logismoi, the words, the thoughts, the distractions have a way of getting kind of stuck rather than just sort of passing through. We all have thoughts that are happening all over the place, but can we allow them to just pass through? Well, there it went, you know, flies overhead. We don't have to follow every thought that comes into our interior when we come into exterior silence and engage the Lord in prayer, for example. So developing that interior silence, that apatheia. And let me just make two more quick contrasts in talking about silence. There's this kind of silence, an interior silence of listening, as opposed to an interior silence of resisting. There's a difference between listening and resisting. Listening has a certain vulnerability. It has a certain availability. It has a certain readiness to receive. Listening is a kind of, there's a kind of womb that's fertile, that's ready to receive and allow something to be conceived and come to birth. There's a listening that has openness. There's a kind of resisting, which is maybe like a contraceptive womb. I'm just thinking about that now as an image, but I think it works quite well. There's a sterile womb or a contraceptive womb that's closed out, that's closing off, that's resisting. It's the difference between a sort of fertile virginity, I suppose, and a sterile resistance, contraception. So we want to have a sort of listening that's more like soft wax, that's receptive, ready to be to receive an impression, that's docile, ready to trust and follow. That's what a disciple does as a follower of the master who speaks and leads. And we're very much this way early on as babies. You know, we take in a tremendous amount, even in the womb. One of the reasons we have that exterior protection in the womb is because we're so receptive in that very small and vulnerable state. We receive all kinds of sensory input. We take all kinds of things in. Parents are continually amazed to hear their own words coming out of their children's mouths. Children are like sponges to take in so much from the exterior world. And we develop a right discretion to not take everything in, but that can turn into a resistance. So we want to cultivate a silence, which is a listening silence, as opposed to a resistant silence, like the resistance of having our hands over our ears or yelling to drown out the voices that we don't want to listen to, or the kind of silence in the gospel where he buries his talent, or the silence of charging off in our own direction rather than following the master. So there's a silence of receptivity, of preparing for the word, and then there's also a kind of silence which is beyond words, that we're moved by words and images into a silence, as opposed to a silence that hides from words. A silence that is hiding from words is maybe cowering, burying our talent. Resistance is related to resistance, avoiding, fearing what someone might say. I want to stay in silence. That's where the, you know, in part where the silent treatment comes from. Or stay in silence, I hide from somebody who's going to tell me something that I don't want to hear. A silence of stuffing things away or of escaping from responsibility. We can think of the earth in a way was that silence, a silence which is a without, in Genesis 1:2, it says, the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. So there's a certain before the word kind of resistance and hiding. But then there's a silence that's beyond words. That's the seventh day. After the words have been spoken, God said, let there be light, and there was light. And his succession of words created things into the silence. And then there was a rest on the seventh day, which was beyond words. God looked at all that he had made, and it was very good, a silence of contemplation. And so after much discussion, we let the truth settle in, the emotions sort of flow out, and we come to a place of silence. Likewise, after discussion, there's a time to move into action. I know that you just had chapter meetings. I think you can maybe call to mind all of those intense discussions, reflecting on many things, and then there's a necessity of coming to silence, to let those things settle. There's a reason that you don't have chapter meetings every month. God help us. So we have very intense things and generate a lot of words and ideas and discussions, but then we need a silence to let them settle in, and a silence also to put them into action. There's a silence that's beyond words, that flows or that allows those words to come to their fulfillment. And that's the same kind of thing in prayer, that we have a silence of contemplation that follows meditation, that after reflections and images and entering into the passage and our fruitful, our looking up everything in our Greek dictionary and finding out the meaning of everything in the passage, that we then have a silence of resting in the meaning, resting in the insight, resting in the presence that's come through those meditations, resting in that contemplation. After climbing a ladder of words to the vision of beauty, we remain there and take it in. After a proclamation of love that we make to the Lord or that He makes to us, we rest simply gazing into the eyes of the Beloved, resting in His arms. Or once certain doubts, fears, questions have been quieted, answered within us, we rest in the peace of trust and confidence. So let me just conclude with a few action items after all of these imageful reflections. How do we cultivate this silence? Well, first of all, by simply stopping. There's a point to just stopping the noise, stopping the talking, stopping the action, stopping. Just stop. That's my favorite word in counseling. Stop it. Would that it would be so simple. But sometimes we can command ourselves like that. Just stop. And usually when we stop, it's sort of like somebody who's been spinning in circles. We stop and we're still spinning, you know. But if we stop, eventually that spinning will slow down and we can come to a certain rest. Cardinal Sarah has a couple of nice words about that. He gives a little commentary on Martha and Mary. He says, Christ tenderly, not harshly, tenderly invites her to stop so as to return to her heart, the place of true welcome and the dwelling place of God's silent tenderness from which she has been led away by the activity to which she was devoting herself so noisily. And Mother Teresa says to us, we too are called to withdraw at certain intervals into deeper silence and aloneness with God, together as a community, as well as personally, to be alone with Him, not with our books, thoughts, and memories, but completely stripped of everything, to dwell lovingly in His presence, silent, empty, expectant, and motionless. So at some point, we just have to stop. And that's the first experience of that may be uncomfortable because we've developed so much noise, because we've been spinning so much. But if we stop and are determined to rest there, things will stop, will slow down. Another action item, so unhook the passions. Be aware of those passions that have a way of hooking our spirit, our pneuma, and holding it in an exterior, superficial place. Unhook those things. What's grabbing my attention? Why do I have a hard time stopping? What am I resisting? What is the fear or jealousy or anger, the grudge or the grasping, the planning, the anxiety that pulls me away, that hooks me and pulls me away from that silence? What are the logismoi, the thoughts, the soundtracks, the song lyrics, the hurtful words that I can't just let pass through me? When I take up that exterior silence and stop, what is the mess, the cloud of words that is happening in me? Unhook those gently, one by one. Let the Lord do it with His mercy. Confront those lies with truth, one by one, but see them, stop and see ourselves enough to recognize where I'm getting stuck in too much noise and superficiality. Another action item. Cultivate awe and wonder. Beauty moves us to silence. Be in the presence of those extraordinary things that move us to silence. Allow ourselves to behold beautiful things, nature and art, words, images, concepts, to come into the presence of beauty and allow ourselves to be lifted up in awe and wonder has a way of moving us naturally to silence. Another action item, allow yourself to rest beyond the words. I remember when I was learning Lectio Divina in a very intentional way. Read, meditate, pray, stop, rest. Once we're moved, we have a way of being moved by something that we read and then wanting more of it. When we eat something that's tasty, we immediately start thinking of where I can get the next bite. Stop and enjoy this bite. Stop and enjoy, savor the taste of that experience in prayer, of that image that the Lord has given you, of the word that He's spoken in your heart. Stop and savor it. Force yourself just to stay there for a moment. Enjoy your food rather than thinking about getting it done or finding another place to have more. Practice resting. Stay there. Another action item. Enjoy the presence in silence. Just to reiterate that word that I started with, Cardinal Sarah said, silence is not an absence. On the contrary, it is the manifestation of a presence, the most intense of all presences. Enjoy the presence. Savor the presence. We don't have to go anywhere. We can stay there. And finally, recover Sunday. Pope Francis has some beautiful words in Laudato Si about Sunday. He says that the Sabbath, the Jewish rest, is meant to heal our relationship with God, with ourselves, with others, and with the world. It's another thing that happens in silence. We heal, give it space, and things heal. We can allow them to rest. He says we tend to demean contemplative rest as something unproductive and unnecessary, but this is to do away with the very thing which is most important about work, its meaning. We come to the meaning of work by celebrating, coming to the end of work, resting in silence. Sunday helps us to work meaningfully by not working, recognizing the meaning, looking back on all that is done. Sunday can be both that reflection beyond words, the silence beyond words, and then also the reception as we enter into a new week and we prepare for the new words that God is going to speak to us. We are called to include in our work a dimension of receptivity and gratuity, which is quite different from mere activity. By having Sunday, we separate ourselves from machines that just keep working meaninglessly. We have a day of rest so that we can work meaningfully. We can come to realize what we have done, and we can listen for what we are to do next. So as we enter into this Eucharist, let us allow ourselves to take in that silence, to unhook those passions, to ask God to order our interior and bring us to that tranquility of life that St. Paul calls the Thessalonians to, and also us to, a place where we can truly receive our divine bridegroom in this Holy Eucharist and rest in His loving presence and in all of the creative work of new life that He brings forth within us.